devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 It's June 7th, 2009, here in Auckland, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, The Appearance of a Demon Vitrasura, text 28 through 30, and just 30 is on the board. Sorry, 28, and then 29 and 30 are actually together. Sri Suka Uvacha, Iti Tesha Maharaja, Suranam Upadishtatam, Prachityam Disya Buddhavi, Sankha Chakra Gadadaraha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, when all the demigods offered him their prayers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, carrying his weapons, the conch shell, disc, and club, appeared first within their hearts and then before them. Atmatulyai sodashabir vinashri vatsakastubo har yupasitam nidra sharad amburu hekshanam. Drisva tam avanau sarva ikshana lada viklava dandavat patita rajan chanair utaya tustuvu drisva tam ananau sarva ikshana lada viklava Atmatulyai, almost equal to himself, Shodasabhihi, by 16 servants, Vina, without, Shivatsa Kastuba, the Shivatsa mark and Kostuba jewel, Haryupasitam, being attended on all sides, Unnidra, the autumn. Amburuha, like lotus flowers. Ikshanam, having eyes. Dristva, seeing. Tam, him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. Avanam, on the ground. Sarve, all of them. Ikshana, from directly seeing. Alada, with happiness. Viklavaha, being overwhelmed. Dandavat, like a stick. Patitaha, fell. Rajan, O King. Shanai, slowly. Uttaya, standing up. Tustubhu, offered prayers. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Surrounding and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana were 16 personal attendants, decorated with ornaments and appearing exactly like him, but without the Shrivats and Vastubhuju. O King, when all the demigods saw the Supreme Lord in that posture, smiling with eyes like the petals of lotuses grown in what season?
Autumn.
They were overwhelmed with a lot of happiness and immediately
fell down
like sticks, offering dandavats. Then they slowly rose and pleased the Lord by offering him prayers. Purport. In Vaikuntha Loka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has four hands and decorations like the Srivatsa mark on his chest and the gem known as Kastuba. These are special indications of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord's personal attendants and other devotees in Vaikuntha have the same features except for the Srivatsa mark and the Kastuba gem. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, when all the demigods offer him their prayers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, carrying his weapons, the conch shell, disc, and club, appeared first within their hearts and then before them. Surrounding and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana were 16 personal attendants, decorated with ornaments and appearing exactly like him, but without the mark of Sri Vatsa and the Kaustubha jewel. O King, when all the demigods saw the Supreme Lord in that posture, smiling with eyes like the petals of lotuses grown in autumn, they were overwhelmed with happiness and immediately fell down like rods offering dandavats. Then they slowly rose and pleased the Lord by offering him prayers." So there's a few verses Krishna says twice in the Bhagavad Gita. One of them is Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta Madjadi Mam Namaskarami Atmana Mad Parayana. Always think of me. So how do you think of somebody unless you know something about them? Most spiritualists, religionists, they'll tell you love God, dedicate everything to God. But that's very difficult if you don't know anything about him. And here we're getting a very nice description of the Lord's form and associates, and also what happens when the devotees see the Lord, how they feel, what kind of experience is going on between the Lord and his devotees. So I was just reading in Krishna book yesterday about how Krishna killed the Agastya demon. So you all know that story. That's probably one of the best known stories in Krishna book. And so the demon comes like a big snake, and all the cowherd boys enter into his mouth. Actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that Krishna didn't want the cowherd boys to enter into the demon's mouth. But the cowherd boys wanted to see Krishna perform some heroic activities. And so the desire of the devotees trumped the desire of the Lord. So the cowherd boys enter into the demon's mouth, and then Krishna's thinking, "Well, now what do I do? Because if I kill the demon, then I'll also kill my friends. You know, how do I deal with this?" And he thought about it for a little while. Just like all of us enjoy solving puzzles, right, and challenges. You like that? Something difficult and you're trying to figure it out, and you figure it out, you go, "Oh, I got it." So Krishna also enjoys that, and he's thinking about it. And he decides, he goes in the demon's mouth and he expands himself. So the demon dies and the cowherd boys are all fine. Then afterwards, the Agasura soul enters into Krishna's body. So there Sukadeva Goswami is saying that the great yogis and meditators, they're always trying to see the Lord in the heart. Like here it's explained, that Krishna first entered their hearts. Krishna first entered the hearts of the demigods, and then he appeared in front of them. So yogis, devotees are always trying to keep the Lord in their heart, but Krishna personally walked into the body of Agasura. Imagine if Giridhari gets down from the altar, walks here, and just walks into, we see him just walk into Gitavani's body here. So that's pretty amazing. But the idea is that we're supposed to keep the Lord in our heart. Prabhupada says there that the devotee should constantly meditate on the form of the Lord. Constantly. Of course, sometimes you hear devotees say, except when you're chanting japa, which is interesting. But anyway, one is supposed to constantly think of the form of the Lord in the heart. So I thought we could go through here and look at the different aspects of this particular pastime so we could meditate on it. First, we have the Lord's weapons. All right? We have the conch shell, disc, and club. The lotus flower isn't particularly mentioned here. Shankha chakra gada dadaha. Dadaha means to hold. So can someone tell me some pastime about the Lord's conch shell? Yes?
He touched it on the head of Dhruva and Dhruva.
Yeah, as soon as he touched it on Dhruva's head, because Dhruva wanted to offer prayers, right, but he didn't know how to. He was, of course, he was only five. Where's little Gopal? Who's running around here? Is he run out now? How old is Gopal? Six. So you could imagine that Gopal would be a little bewildered if he saw the Lord in front of him. He wouldn't quite know what to say. He would, he'd have to try to remember all the slokas he learned in Gurukul, wasn't he? What other pastimes with the conch shell? Yes? Yes, that's actually how Krishna got his conch shell weapon, although he has it eternally, when he saved the son of his teacher. And after Sandipani Muni taught Krishna, he said, okay, now we'd like some dakshina. Okay, what would you like? I'd like you to rescue my dead son. Okay, anything else with the conch shell?
Do it before we start the battle of Krishna.
Yes, and Krishna's and Arjuna's conch shells are described as transcendental. Right? And they shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Right? So that's one thing we can meditate on, the Lord's conch shell. It's described that the conch shell appears reddish from the lotus palm of the Lord. So conch shell is generally white, but it's reflecting the Lord's reddish palm. So that's a very nice thing we can hold in our hearts. Okay, what about the disc weapon? Oh, so many with disc.
Shishupal.
Right? Everybody's, all right, Shishupal is making this. Shishupal, of course, waits until after Krishna's worshipped. You know, he doesn't make any of his points before Krishna's worship. He waits till after Krishna's worship. Why? Because he's trying to ruin the whole Rajasuya Jagya. And he starts going on and on and on criticizing Krishna, and the people in the audience, the kings and the princes and the sages, are getting very disturbed, and Krishna sees there's about to be a fight breakout in the middle of the Rajasuya Jagya. So he just finishes him with his disc. Yes? Oh, Durvasa Muni. When Durvasa Muni insults Maharaj Ambarish by trying to kill him, pretty heavy-duty insult. And Maharaj Ambarish, thinking himself an offender, was just standing there with folded hands. By the way, he wouldn't have done that if it was another Kshatriya king on the battlefield challenging him, but since it was a Brahmin and a guest, and he felt that he was an offender. But then Krishna protected, and Prabhupada gives that the example that the devotees don't need to develop mystic powers to protect themselves. They're like a little child holding onto their parents' hand, right? Their big brother, their father's hand. And then the Sudarshan Chakra chased Durvasa Muni all over the universe, and even he went to Lord Narayan and Lakshmi, and they said, sorry, can't help you, you've got to go back to the devotee you offended. Then Maharaj Ambarish was offering prayers to the chakra. Wonderful, wonderful prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra. Yes?
I think there it says that Krishna actually gave the Sudarshan Chakra to Maharaj
Ambarish. That he gave it to him as for protection. Wow. Yes? Jaghai and Madhai. I think it's the only time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called for any weapons. And the Jaghai and Madhai. And they attack Lord Nityananda. All of a sudden, the Sudarshan disc appears in his hand. Yes? Gajendra. Where he used the Sudarshan disc to cut off the head of the crocodile. That's one of my favorite stories, is Gajendra. Gajendra is considered by Rupa Goswami to be a neophyte devotee because he's approaching the Lord for relief from distress. But even though he was feeling such distress, when the Lord appeared, he didn't say, "Please relieve me from distress." He picked up a lotus flower. He wanted to do something for Krishna despite his distress condition. So many nice lessons in this story. Any more insight into the Sudarshan Chakra? Yes. Wow. So right, the subterranean heavens, they're below the sunshine. I always think of it sort of an eternal Las Vegas night. You know, they never see the fact everything's just artificially lit up and they're all thinking, yes, we're enjoying. And then every once in a while the Sudarshan Chakra comes and just crushes the whole thing. All right, then we have the club. Gada. Kamodaki Club. Varaha, he's fighting with Hiranyaksha with the club, and at one point, what happens to Varaha's club? It drops, and it swirls. And what happens? Imagine this demon, he's been terrorizing the earth, and now Krishna comes to fight with him, and he's fighting, and then he drops his club. And all the demigods say, oh, that Krishna likes excitement. I mean, sometimes you see he just finishes the demons like that, like Dantavakra, he just finished him very quickly. But sometimes he goes through this sort of drama, and he appears even to lose. Anything else with the club? Sometimes it's said that the club is decorated by the blood of the demons. Krishna's a young man, you know, he likes gore sometimes. Anything else with the club? We don't have the lotus flower mentioned here, but of course he was carrying his lotus flower. I was thinking how Krishna likes to just carry a lotus flower for fun and twirl it around. Sometimes stick it over his ear. All right. Then we have something really incredible here about his associates. Well, first of all, it's mentioned that there's 16, and I was thinking about numbers. How there's... I was going to look it up, but my internet went out and I didn't have a chance. There's something called, I think, Fibonacci numbers?
Fibonacci.
Fibonacci, okay, thank you. And there's certain repeating numbers in nature, like in the number of flower petals and things like that. And we find that in Krishna's pastimes and the Shastras, there's certain numbers that repeat, and one of them is 16. It's not that the 16 mounds is just some arbitrary number. Although I do know one other Gaudiya group where the devotees all chant 15 rounds. Their guru tells them, "I don't want you to think you're better than the ISKCON devotees." So he gave his disciples 15 rounds. But 16 rounds is often repeated throughout the 16, not rounds, 16, the number 16 is often repeated throughout the Shastra. And I was trying to find out the significance of these 16 personal attendants. There's one place where Prabhupada talks about 16 main gatekeepers in Vaikuntha. Although there's many, many more, there's 16 chief gatekeepers, and I'll read about some of the gatekeepers in a minute. And there's also 16 main material elements. Anybody know what those would be? 16 main elements? 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses, 5 material elements, and the mind. So earth, water, fire, and the mind. So that's mentioned over and over again. And then there's one place, I think it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada says that the 16,000 gopis represent 16 different internal energies of the Lord. He doesn't say what those are. So we see that, you know, there are 16,108 queens, we have the 16,000 gopis, there are 16 main energies, and Krishna has here 16 attendants. Now what's interesting is that they all look almost exactly like him, Atmatulyai. They're almost exactly like him, just a few distinguishing features. Of course, here they have the Swarupya liberation, where they look like God. So in thinking about this, I was thinking about the Lord's non-envious nature. I mean, generally, we don't really like it, especially women. We won't say why, especially women, but you can add 2 and 2 and get 4. So especially women don't like someone else who's looking just like them. It really disturbs them. Like, you guys don't seem to mind that you're all wearing the same color sweatshirts. know, but I might have told this story before, but one of my students who was from Nepal one time gave me this beautiful cheddar. It was so beautiful. He said, this is a gift from my mother, and it was just all these different colors. And I was really proud, and I went to the temple the next morning with my cheddar. And guess what? What do you think I saw there in the temple room? Lots and lots of the ladies had the same cheddar. His mother had bought the same thing for everybody. And I sat down to try to chant Hare Krishna, and I couldn't chant. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, I'm really envious. So generally speaking, you know, just like the very rich people, they have designer clothes, that only they have that particular piece of clothing. Right? They want their unique look. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna is not at all envious, although he is the most beautiful and the most powerful. Still, he's very happy to have his devotees look like him. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I have some nice things to read here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Sanatana Goswami, says, each Vaikuntha planet is very large and each is made of spiritual bliss. The inhabitants are all associates of the Supreme Lord and they have full opulence like the Lord himself. And it says here, Purna. Sat Ashraya Purna. Now usually we hear how Krishna has opulences more than the devotees, but here Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that the devotees have Krishna's opulences in full. Krishna likes to share. You know, we often hear how Krishna's the supreme enjoyer, he's the Purusha, we're all for Kriti, we're just instruments of his enjoyment. And we think of that materially. You know, in this world, if we're just instruments of someone else's enjoyment, that's not a very pleasant situation. Nobody wants to be, materially speaking, just the instrument of somebody else's enjoyment. But although that's true with Krishna, still Krishna is sharing his enjoyment and his opulence with the devotees. So I thought I'd read a little bit from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of when Gopa Kumara goes to Vaikuntha. Then I went to Vaikuntha, which is garlanded with glories beyond the reach of the mind and words. Then the Lord's associate said to me, wait outside for a moment. We will inform the Lord and then you may enter. Stay here and with eyes alight with devotion for the Lord, see the waves of wonders never seen or heard of before. As they went inside and I stayed outside the gate, I saw someone come and begin to enter that city. He was on a transcendental airplane, which was rich with the opulences of hundreds of universes. And this is how opulent just one of the devotees in Vaikuntha is. Singing wonderful songs and glorifying the Lord in many ways, he was filled with happiness, like these demigods, Alara. They're filled with happiness. His splendid handsomeness and other features were like the Lord's. Thinking he was Lord Hari, again and again I said to him, oh Lord, please save me! He at once covered his ears, bowed down before me, and stopped me with these words. He said, I am a servant, and I am a servant of the servants, and went inside. Then another person, who was more opulent and glorious, came. Seeing him, I thought he was the Lord of the universes, who in his pastimes had gone somewhere and was now entering his own city. Seeing me respectfully bowing down and speaking prayers, as I had before, he affectionately spoke to me as the other person had, and then he entered the city. Sanatana Goswami explains that again Gopa Kumara said, oh Lord, please save me. And again the person covered his ears and said, I'm just a servant of the servants. More persons, some alone, some in groups of two, some in very large groups, came, each more glorious than the one before, and entered the Lord's city. Seeing them as before, I dived into the ocean of awe and reverence, bowed down before them, and offered prayers to them. But they stopped me and spoke to me with a nectar of affectionate words as the others had before them. Some were carrying things to offer the Lord, and some, intoxicated by the nectar of loving devotion, just ran ahead. Their mind and senses were intent on their own specific services. They were decorated with the pastimes of the bliss of wonderful services. All their limbs decorated the decorations they wore. We also hear this about Krishna, right? Usually when a person puts on ornaments, they look more beautiful. But when Krishna puts on the ornaments look more beautiful. And the same is true for his devotees. They were as glorious as the Lord himself. Bowing down and reciting prayers, they acted wonderfully. Some came with associates, some with paraphernalia, and some with both associates and paraphernalia. Some merged their associates and paraphernalia into their own selves and became like penniless solitary sages. Some, moment by moment, manifested different wonderful and charming forms, each opulent with different and wonderful ornaments, features, and pastimes. Some looked like humans, some monkeys, some demigods, some demons, and some looked like sages. Others carried the marks of being initiated in the orders of Varna and Ashrami. Sanatana Goswami explains that the forms of the Vaikuntha residents are all eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. They are not actually humans or any of these other forms. Some looked like Indra, Chandra, other demigods. Some had three eyes, some had four heads, some had four arms, some had eight arms, and some had 1,000 faces. I will tell you the reason for this great wonder. How can they who taste the nectar devotion to Lord Krishna not be handsome? The glories of Vaikuntha's residence were all beyond the material world of five elements, cannot be described with the examples drawn from the worlds of the five elements. O Brahmana, because you're a resident of the material world, and because your thoughts and vision are within the material world, I have used some material examples so that you may understand. The residents of Vaikuntha are all equal. Then again, among them there are gradations of higher and lower. There is no contradiction in this. For them there's no envy or any other thoughts, faults. They have thousands of natural, eternal, transcendental virtues. Although they never accept material forms, they do playfully manifest many wonderful forms just to please the Lord. Sometimes everything there seems made of gold and jewels, and sometimes everything seems made of solidified moonlight. No one can understand it without having seen it. Seeing them coming and going, I thought, if the Lord's servants are like this, what is the Lord like? Dragged by joy, I stood and then sat down as I waited by the gate. Then by the Lord's associates, I was quickly brought inside. Then I saw a wonder of wonders. Even Lord Ananta, with his thousands of mouths, could not describe it in the life of Brahma. There were gate after gate, and at each gate there were gatekeepers as before. Each time the gatekeepers informed their master and then allowed me to enter. As I went to each gate, I saw there was one leader to whom the gatekeepers bowed down. I thought, this must be the Lord of the universes, and also bowed down to him and glorified him again and again. But the leader was actually just the supervisor of the gatekeepers. Then the Lord's affectionate devotees described to me the Lord's uncommon features and taught me how to glorify and worship him. So that's, of course, the Srivatsa and the Kaustubha jewel. Now, the Srivatsa is the resting place of the goddess of fortune. And Prabhupada explains that a husband always takes good care of his wife, and just like by embracing her to his chest. He doesn't just abandon her. I was talking with one devotee last night who was in India, very poor, and he was saying, I'd like to go to Saudi Arabia so I can earn more money. I said, yeah, but then you'll have to leave your mother, your wife, and your daughter for 6 years. So I said, what is the use of that? So just like the ordinary persons generally protect their wives, so the Lord always keeps the goddess of fortune on his chest. And the Kaustubha gem, it said, is decorated with the sign of a calf and represents all the living entities. So that means all of us are actually eternally situated on this Kaustubha gem of the Lord. So how wonderful the Lord is. He's not an exploiter. He's not envious. He has servants who are so glorious that when someone sees them, they think that he's the Lord himself. They don't think that he's a servant. Prabhupada would say this over and over again. The servant of the king enjoys almost on an equal level with the king. Well, what happens when we meditate on the Lord like this? If we meditate on the Lord's glorious qualities, on his pastimes, on his weapons, on his form, on his jewels, what happens? We become happy like these demigods, right? We become alada. We become full of happiness. And really, whatever we meditate on, yam yam bhakti swam bhavam, tvaja chante kalevram, tam tam eva tikantaya, sadatam bhavita, whatever we meditate on is what we become. Prabhupada says that work, even material work, is not really done with the body. It's done with the mind. With the mind and with the heart. So we think about first Krishna entering the heart. As it said here, he entered the hearts of the demigods. First, that's done by we use the material mind. Lord Kapila Dev explained this, that you use the mind like a hook to capture the Lord. And eventually the thoughts of the Lord dissolve that same material mind. So we use the material mind to always think about Krishna, always. Satatam kirtayam tomam, yatantas chadradavitama, yatantas namasyan chastimam bhakta, nitya yukta upasthita. Nitya, always. This system of bhakti yoga is not a once a week thing. You know, I'm a materialistic person and I just go once a week and I do my little whatever it is. Or even, you know, five times a day or once a day. It's supposed to be nityam, always thinking about Krishna. And of course, you know, at first, chanchala himana Krishna, the mind's going to pull it back, pull it back, pull it back, pull it back. Somehow, think about Krishna's Vaikuntha associates. Think about one of Krishna's pastimes with the Sudarshan Chakra. Think about Krishna's pastimes with his conch shell. Think about Krishna's Kastubha gem with the calf on it. Now, we're doing that with the material mind, but that transforms the material mind. The mind is made up of thoughts and desires, which give us another body. Basically, that's Krishna's reciprocating with us. If you want the dog body, just like you can find so many pictures of people who look like their dogs even in this life, right? You want a dog body, you're always thinking about your dog, then you get a dog body. You're always thinking about your wife, you're always thinking about your husband, you're always thinking about your horse race, whatever it is, you get that corresponding body. So if we're thinking about Krishna, because that's a spiritual thought, it starts to dissolve the mind. There's nothing to feed it anymore. If there's no more material thoughts, there's no more material mind. And then Krishna himself appears in the heart. As one devotee explained to me, it's the difference between spiritualized matter and spirit. Spiritualized matter, just like these flowers have been offered to Krishna, but still, after some time, they're going to rot. Whereas the garland that Krishna wears, it always had the bumblebees. There's no bees would ever hum around this garland. But the spiritual garland, the bees are humming around. So when the mind is absorbed in Krishna, that's spiritualized matter. And eventually Krishna becomes attracted, as Lord Kapiladeva said, he uses like a hook. I mean, even we're like that. If somebody's always thinking about us, we become interested. Even if they're thinking about us negatively. If we hear, oh, so-and-so is always talking about you and criticizing you, we become interested, don't we? I mean, maybe because we want to beat the guy up or solve the problem or whatever. And we talk about this among ourselves. I don't know if we always mean it, but, you know, to our family and friends, we say, oh, yes, I've been thinking about you. I've missed you so much. Again, I don't know if it's actually true when we say those things. But we're interested like that. We're interested in someone who's thinking about us. And Krishna, as Prabhupada says in the story of Jambavan, Krishna has all the instincts of an ordinary person. We're all part of him. And he becomes interested if we're endeavoring to think of him. He says, oh, I think I'll go there. And he comes into the heart. And then after entering into the heart, then he appears face to face as he's here with the demigods. Then what happens when Krishna appears face to face? I thought I would read this from Madhurya Kanamani. Because here it's just explained that the demigods felt a lot of, they felt happiness, and in their happiness they immediately fell down like rods, and then very slowly, with great effort, because they were so overwhelmed with ecstasy, they got up again. So that's kind of a summary description. So I think I'd like to go into a little bit more depth. This is from Madhurya Kanamani of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. What happens when the devotee in full samadhi, in full meditation on the Lord, has the Lord appear in his heart and then before him? The Lord reveals first his beauty to the eyes of the devotee. On account of the sweetness of that beauty, all the senses and the mind take on the quality of eyes. And obstacles such as paralysis, shaking, and tears are generated. From this, the devotee swoons. So the same thing, just falling down like a rod. To console the devotee, the Lord next reveals his fragrance to the nostrils of the devotee. And by this, the devotee's senses all take on the quality of the nose in order to smell. Like we hear, Krishna has angani asya sakalendriya vrittimanti pasyanti panti kalayanti, that each of his senses can perform the actions of the other senses. This is also true for the spiritual bodies of the liberated soul. So when Krishna appears to the devotees, first, he shows his beauty, and all of the senses take the quality of eyes. So it's full seeing, and then all the senses take the quality of the nose. Again, the devotee swoons in bliss. The Lord then reveals his sonorous voice to the devotee's ears. All the senses become like ears to hear, and for the third time the devotee faints. The Lord then mercifully gives the touch of his foot, hands, or his breast to the devotee. That depends on the relationship. And the devotee experiences the Lord's fresh youthfulness. To those in the mood of servant, he bestows his lotus feet on their heads. To those in the mood of friendship, he grasps their hands with his. To those in the conjugal mood, he embraces, touching them with his hands and chest. Then the devotee's senses all take on the sense of touch, and the devotee faints for a fourth time. The Lord then restores him by giving the taste from his own lips. This, however, is revealed only to those in the conjugal mood. The devotee's senses take on the sense of taste, and he faints for a fifth time. This blissful swoon is so deep that the Lord must revive him by bestowing his generosity, the sixth type of mercy. This generosity refers to a state in which simultaneously all of the Lord's qualities, beauty, fragrance, sound, touch, and taste, all suddenly manifest themselves to the devotee's various senses. So this is the result of meditating on the Lord. So why not? We're always meditating on something. The mind cannot be vacant. The impersonalists and the voidists, they say that meditating on the things of this world gives us so much trouble, which it does. They say, all right, well, make the mind empty. Meditate on nothing. I was recently reading Radhanath Marj's book, The Journey Home, and he talks about meeting all these different yogis and gurus, and some of them were trying to teach him some impersonalist or voidist meditation. Like they'd say, meditate on the line where the wall meets the floor, you know, for 8 hours. And if you even move slightly, the teacher would come and hit you with a big snoot. So they tried to make their mind void, you know, one hand clapping, line, just some line. But that's not the nature of the mind. We're always thinking about something. Why not think about Krishna? Why not think about Krishna? And not to be discouraged if you think, okay, well, I haven't thought about Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes for the last 5 years in the Hare Krishna movement, so it's useless. You know, you can always start from now, and the mind will wander. What does Krishna say in the sixth chapter? You just bring it back. Bring it back. Bring it back. Oh, what can I think about today? Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra going to the hellish planets, or following around Durvasa Muni, or the club whirling throughout outer space, or how Krishna's associates all look like him, or the calf on the club, or something. Right? Anything having to do with Krishna. And even if your mind just grasps it for a moment and wanders again, pull it back. And gradually, by practice, as Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, yes, the mind is turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, but by constant practice and detachment. Detachment means you don't go, oh, it's useless. I'll never get it. Constant practice and by detachment. And eventually, Krishna will say, oh, you're trying so hard to think of me. And he'll be naturally drawn to enter our It was pretty good with the clock telling me it's 5 to 2. You don't want to be speaking, you don't want to be constantly doing this. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Yes. Meditating on your service, yes. But then there's different varieties. How are you meditating on your service? Are you meditating on your service, I want to do this very nicely so everybody will praise me? You know, I want to do it so I can show off my abilities. I want to do this so I'll get something to eat and a place to sleep. You know, or am I doing it to please Guru? Am I doing it to please Krishna? Am I doing it to please the devotees? So think about the person. Just like an ordinary person has on their desk at work pictures of their family. That's how they keep going. When the boss comes and yells at them, customers yell at them over the phone or whatever, you know, they're told they got to put in extra hours when they planned on going to the beach. They look at the pictures of their family and they think, that's who I'm doing it for. So every moment of what we're doing, we should be focused on that relationship with Krishna. Is that all right? Prabhupada Prabhupada wrote a letter to Jayapataka Swami. He said, surrender to Krishna means you do everything, not getting the words exactly right, but do everything with great attention to detail no matter what it is. Try to do it to the best of your ability. But you're doing that for Krishna. Just like Krishna Das Kaviraj describes how Vrindadevi comes to Radha and Krishna and says, the six seasons have all decorated themselves for your pleasure. Now you please come and see them. See what they've done. So that's the mood of the devotee, that we're trying to do our service so Krishna can see it and be happy with it. So our spiritual master can see it, so the other devotees can see it. Somehow to please Krishna. Does that make sense? I'm doing this very nicely, so Krishna's watching me and he's thinking, oh, this is really nice. Look at this cake. Look how this person is standing out in the rain trying to distribute books. Look how this person is cleaning the temple and getting every corner. Yes. I hope that younger devotees are also individuals. I hope that not just older devotees are individuals. Okay, I hope we're all individuals.
Definitely.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify.
But obviously, someone has to be empowered to change the mood, the flavors, the different things. And, you know, for example, when I joined, we had a Macmillan buddy with me. And recently, when I was living in Texas, giving advice to someone, I realized this is a vast difference like the one that I went on. And I really knew it off my heart, and I had a little.
Well, you know, it was a Burjan Prabhu who asked you, Prabhupada, how do you tell the difference between eternal principles that can't be changed and time and place circumstances that can? He said that requires intelligence. And one of the main source of conflicts that I see as I travel the world is people have different views on those things. So devotee A thinks that such and such is an eternal principle that can't be changed, and devotee B thinks that very same thing is a time, place, and circumstance thing that can be changed. And when you have some temples you have where pretty much everyone in the temple is accepting the same ideas that, okay, this is an eternal principle that can't be changed, these are temporary things that can't. But you'll see that different in different temples. And then in some temples there's no coherent agreement on that kind of thing, and people often get into very severe arguments about it. And I'm just recently dealing with people arguing about whether or not devotees who do full-time service should be charged for prasadam. And everybody can pull out their quote, frankly. You know, there's one side pulls out one quote, set of quotes, and the other side pulls out another set of quotes, and they're each saying, this is what Prabhupada wants, and this is the way it should be done. So there's a very nice letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Atreya Rishi, and he said that these differences of opinion are due to personalism and the fact that we are individuals. And he said, don't expect any utopia. He said, even in the spiritual world, different people have different opinions. In fact, Prabhupada said there that just like there's different political parties, maybe it was a different place, but he said there's different political parties in a government. He said they even have different aims and objectives. But because they're all trying to serve the good of the country, therefore the government accepts them. So if we want to have, I would suggest that if we want to have a society of love and trust, that my humble request is to always assume that the devotees you deal with are actually trying to serve Guru and Krishna. That's the first thing. Just like in this controversy I'm dealing with about whether or not devotees should pay for prasadam. So one side is saying, oh, these people who are giving out prasadam for free, they don't care about maintaining the restaurant and maintaining the temple. They just want the whole temple to go under financially. And the people who are making plates and giving it out the back door to the devotees, which is actually what they're doing, they say, oh, these managers and leaders, they don't care about the devotees. They just care about business and money. Now, just by the way, I don't think either one of those is true. I think the managers who are saying that, and the prasadam they're giving out for free is 10 times more opulent than what they're selling in the restaurant. So the devotees who are running the temple, I think they're concerned about keeping the temple financially solvent. And they're following Prabhupada's instructions for a restaurant. And the people who are, you know, serving the devotees the lasagna and the eggplant parmesan out the back door, they're thinking about how to make the devotees happy. You know? So everybody's trying to make Prabhupada happy. But they're looking at each other through this lens of my way is the only way, my understanding is the only understanding. Now, having said that, sometimes there are things that are just out-and-out nonsense. And that's the purpose for which we have leaders in GBC, or just like I'm on the Shastric Advisory Council, and there was a big controversy whether or not Advaitacharya in Mayapur Dham should have a beard. And what was very interesting about that is that everything that we could find from Srila Prabhupada said that all the deities of Advaitacharya should have a beard. It was completely explicit and clear. And all of Prabhupada's purports describing Advaitacharya described him as having a beard. Mm-hmm. And the Panchatattva deities, he personally installed Advaitacharya had a beard. But guess who said that Advaitacharya didn't have a beard? Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. What do you do about that? And he also very explicitly and clearly said in the purport to Chaitanya Bhagavat, that he's, and it was in a purport to a verse that said that Advaitacharya had a beard. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said, one should not think that Advaitacharya has a beard like some Baul, B-A-U-L. He said he's always clean-shaven. What to do? You know, we deliberated for months on the topic, and our conclusion, which the GBC accepted, was that the Lord can appear in different ways at different times to different devotees, and different people have different visions of the Lord, and different acharyas see things differently, and our business is to follow Prabhupada, even if it's a case where the disagreement is with his own spiritual master. So that was our recommendation. Now, interestingly enough, what they did was that they didn't cast the deity with the beard, like the deity in Hawaii where I just came from. The beard is actually part of the form, but the beard is a separate. It's like we put a wig on the deity. It's a separate thing that can be put on and off. So was there a right answer to that? The reason I'm bringing this up is, was there a right answer or a wrong answer? I don't think so. I don't think there was a right answer or a wrong answer. Either way would have been right, and either way would have been wrong. And you make a decision and you go on. But we do have people who are supposed to act as guardians of the Siddhanta. We do have people in our movement who are supposed to take that role. Now, whether or not those people always do it properly, but that's what they're supposed to do. And if they don't do it properly, then you know what will happen? If we get off and we change the Siddhanta and our guardians of the Siddhanta in ISKCON don't do it properly, then you know what? Krishna will send somebody to fix things. That's what he does. That's what happened with Gaudiya Vaishnavism, right? It had gone way off the track, and people were propounding illicit sex as a form of worshiping the Lord and all sorts of things, and the Siddhanta of Gaudiya Vaishnavism had degraded, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared to reestablish things. So what I see is, if we're going to have a love and trust society, this is just my humble suggestion, is assume that the other person has good motives. We tend to assume that I have good motives and the person who disagrees with me has bad motives. And the person who disagrees with me tends to assume that they have good motives and that I have bad motives. So just like I would like people to assume that I have good motives, I really would. You know, I'd really like everybody here to assume that I'm doing things because I want to serve Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON and Krishna. Even if that's not my motive, I'd like you to give me that benefit of the doubt. So give other people that benefit of the doubt. Then you'll find that things can be resolved much more easily. And when things can't be resolved, when we're really fighting on some core issue, and we're saying, this thing is violating the core Siddhanta, then you have to take it to the guardians of our movement. And again, if they decide something, if you take it to the highest level of guardianship in the Hare Krishna movement, and they make some decision that you're sure, that you as an individual are still convinced is violating the Siddhanta, then you have to go to the boss. You know, that's what Advaitacharya did. He went to the boss. He said, I can't do it, Lord, you come. So you can do that. You can go to Krishna and say, my dear Krishna, somebody needs to take care of Krishna. My dear Krishna, somebody needs to take care of Krishna, Pujaris. So if we're saying, my dear Krishna, I don't think that the guardians of your movement are actually taking care of the Siddhanta, you please come. You please manifest. And you please rectify the situations. I don't think I want to say any more than that now. But thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.